Billy, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what's going on north of me on the coast of Florida, but I hear thunder out by the ocean. So if I lose contact, you know why. But welcome, everyone. Dean Amber, thanks for the invite. I want to thank everyone for being here tonight. This could be a sometimes you talk about this subject in this piece of literature and you're opening up a can of worms. People have a lot of different views and opinions and God knows what else. But I want to start off by saying a couple of things. I'm going to guess, I was talking about this earlier, I don't need you to raise your virtual digital hand, but I am just curious, just by raising your own hand, how many here have been to some type of big book retreat or big book workshop? Okay. So almost all of us, which does not surprise me. So if you go to a big book workshop, one of the things that you learn, people like I am taught, is that there are only two things that make you an alcoholic, but I think we all learn in AA that while certain traits and characteristics don't make you an alcoholic, they sure seem to be very common among AA members. Good, bad, ugly, everything. One of those is that it seems that me and some others, we like to make up our own definition of words. Now, I don't know if it just runs more with alcoholics or not, or with people, but it just seems that I know I've had that problem. So I just want to read at a big book study. One of the things that's so helpful is they pass on to you. If you run into a word in the big book that you don't know or understand, you should look it up and write the definition in the book. And a lot of times when you're going through the book, reading it with someone who's been through the book, a lot of times you realize, oh, wow, you have a different definition than I do. And you realize you didn't know what it means. So I want to just read out a couple of definitions just so we can all be on the same page. The definition of alcohol: a colorless, volatile, flammable liquid that is produced by the natural fermentation of sugars and is the intoxicating constituent of wine, beer, spirits, and other drinks, and is also used as an industrial solvent and as a fuel. That's the definition of alcohol. The next definition is drink, a very simple word, D-R-I-N-K. To take liquid into the mouth and swallow. That's what the definition of drink is. Alcoholism, you can find a lot in a dictionary, medical dictionaries. None of them are going to really coincide with the big book. But even alcoholism, even if you, I don't even like to use the term the outside world uses. But at least in most places, it says a chronic disease characterized by uncontrolled drinking. I'm not going to split hairs with them, but I just want to set the stage for what we're going to talk about. Because the one thing I want to stress with this subject is sometimes we get awfully cocky in AA and awfully arrogant. And even though working with others tells us not to be on a spiritual hilltop, not to be, you know, talking from the podium, sometimes we give in to what we hear. And sometimes what we hear is, well, don't matter what you say to a newcomer, because if they leave, who cares? Alcohol will bring them back in. I don't subscribe to that theory. Not for real alcoholics. The chance that they'll come back is very low. So I don't think, so what I'm trying to say is, it's okay to be compassionate, especially to new people. And we don't want to talk down or treat them in a manner that we wouldn't want to be treated ourselves. And because this is a very sensitive subject, and going to what I started off with, it seems that another character trait of a lot of people I know in AA, including myself, is being sensitive. It seems that we have an overabundance of people that are sensitive as well. It doesn't make you an alcoholic, but we have it. And so I just want to stress that this topic, we're really dealing with life and death. I can't stress it anymore that we're dealing with life and death. So let's start off with, if you have this pamphlet in front of you, I want to start off with some of the things that Amber read. I'm not going to read everything she read, but I want to read some things. Problems Other Than Alcohol by Bill W., co-founder, Alcoholics Anonymous. Quick tangent. We have two co-founders in Alcoholics Anonymous. We don't need any more use of the word founder. Founders of groups, founders of conventions, founders of anything. It seems anytime we throw the word founder around, it never is used for a good purpose. It's always used to separate. So we have two co-founders. And it starts off where Amber started off. Perhaps there is no more suffering, more horrible than drug addiction, especially that kind which is produced by morphine, heroin, and other narcotics. Such drugs twist the mind, and the awful process of withdrawal racks the sufferer's body. Compared with the addict and his woes, we alcoholics are pikers. So let's go to the dictionary again. I'm pretty sure the one definition of piker that it's not is a gambler or speculator in small amounts. But the one definition that probably fits it, the reason that Bill used it, is one who does things in a small way. So right here, Bill is saying, compared with the addict and his woes, we alcoholics are pikers. And then the next line, barbiturates carried to extremes can be almost as bad. So Bill is saying that narcotics are really bad and barbiturates carried, taken to extremes can be as well. So before I go to the next line, why do we say, compared to drug addicts, we're pikers? I'm often a fan of saying that I'm a real alcoholic, and it scares me to tell an alcoholic that alcohol is not deadly, because to someone like me, it is. So what does it mean, this piker thing? Well, one of the things I'm going to try to do is bring Bill's words into 2021. In other words, not change his words, but talk about examples in real life today. And so let's talk about comparing the heroin addict to the alcoholic and saying the alcoholic's a piker. I think most of us know people who have gone out and drank and had horrible consequences. Family consequences, work consequences, legal consequences, medical consequences, and for some, fatal. So why piker? Why are we a piker compared to the narcotics addict? Well, it's very simple, and if you are around the recovery world today, I think you know. The percentages of alcoholics who go out for a night and die that night, I want to stress die, is very low, extremely low. It is not the same for narcotic addicts. The chance that a narcotic addict, and let's really be clear about this. The chance that an alcoholic will go out tonight and drink and die from drinking alcohol is extremely low. Then we can get into the situations of crashing motorcycles, crashing cars, violent crimes, and those. But let's just talk about no interaction with a third party at all. The percentage of narcotic addicts who die just from taking that narcotic one time is through the roof. It's through the roof compared to comparing it to the alcoholic who drinks. And if anything, tonight's talk about problems other than alcohol is not about, I mean, I don't know how many people are in here, 62? We're not going to send you out to 62 home groups to root out all the drug addicts and get them out of AA. That is not the purpose of going through this pamphlet. But I will tell you one of the purposes in regards to the term pikers is I would have no problem telling you to go find a non-alcoholic narcotic addict that is possibly dying in your group. It is dying because they can't identify. And I love the saying, the newcomer will only take your solution if they know you have their problem. They need to know you have the same problem. So it goes on to say, in AA, we have members who've made great recoveries from both the bottle and the needle. So that's a pretty strong statement. And listen to what Bill's saying there. In AA, we have members who have made great recoveries from both the bottle and the needle. Both. Both is the key word there. We also have a great many others who were or still are victimized by goofballs and even by the new tranquilizers. And God knows we know today, compared to what was going on back then, we have lots and lots. Then it says, consequently, this problem of drug addiction in its several forms lies close to us all. It stirs our deepest interest and sympathy. In the world around us, we see legions of men and women who are trying to cure or escape their problems by this means. Many AAs, especially those who have suffered from these particular addictions, are now asking, what can we do about drugs within our fellowship and without? And I have no problem saying in my reading and study of the history, another trait, it's going to be a common theme that I'm going to have tonight, that does not make you an alcoholic, but it does seem to be common among alcoholics, is liking to be better than. It seems we have a disproportionate percentage of human beings who like to be better than others. And why do I bring that up? Because what about those funny little jokes we like to tell in diners or parking lots? I'll give you an example of one. What's the difference between a drug addict and an alcoholic? And you know the punchline. The drug addict will steal your wallet and help you look for it. That is total garbage. That is total alcoholics trying to make us better than other people. My own experience in AA is we have thieves and criminals of all types that happen to be alcoholic as well. And having heard a bunch of inventories and fifth steps, I have no problem saying that stealing seems to be just as prevalent among alcoholics. But why do we have that statement? Is it to make us feel better then? Is it to make us feel more morally superior? I don't know, but it's ridiculous nonetheless. It says, because several projects to help pill and drug takers are already afloat, projects which use AA's 12 steps and which AA members are active, there has arisen a whole series of questions as to how these efforts, already meeting with not a little success, can be highly related to the AA groups and to AA as a whole. So we get to this part where it says, specifically, here is a list of questions. Now, if you have the abridged version, it gives you the answers to the questions right away. You don't have to keep reading. I'm not a big fan of abridged versions of anything. Only because I want people to seek their own spiritual truth. Not to be carrying on the interpretation of someone that maybe they put on a pedestal. I'd much rather have them find their own. And so putting the answers in this pamphlet, if I could give you a comparison, that's like calling me and asking me a traditions question and me just giving you the answer instead of saying, you know, you might want to read AA Comes of Age. You know, you might want to get your own copy of the Traditions Illustrated. And what this pamphlet is doing the work for somebody. Now, those questions, can a non-alcoholic pill or drug addict become an AA member? Let's talk about the important part of that question. Non-alcoholic. Notice it uses the italics that's in the same as in the big book. And we know italics mean important. Joe and Charlie said italics was a fancy word. They called it squiggly writing. So whether you like squiggly writing or italics, the italics part is non-alcoholic. That's how important that word is. So can a non-alcoholic pill or drug addict become an AA member? No. Can such a person be brought as a visitor to an open AA meeting for help and inspiration? Sure. Yes. Can a pill or drug taker who also has a genuine alcoholic history become a member of AA? Yes, of course. But what's the term there? Genuine alcoholic history. Genuine alcoholic history. Notice we're already 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, almost 6 large paragraphs through this pamphlet. And what haven't we seen? Well, we haven't seen the term non-conference approved substances. That is maybe the worst phrase invented in all of AA service. I've searched and searched. Alcohol is not conference approved. There's no such thing as non-conference approved. But what also haven't we read? It does not say, and I'm going to read this question one more time, can a pill or a drug taker who also has a genuine alcoholic history become a member of AA? It says yes. It's a yes. But what about if I change that sentence? Can a non-alcoholic pill or drug addict become an AA member? Back to question one. Well, in some places in today's world, they've created a new word for non-alcoholic. It's called, or for alcohol, it's called alcohol in powder form. You heard that one? It's a very, very interesting term. Based on what I read, alcohol in powder form and non-alcoholic pill or drug addict are the same. The exact same. So, if we go back to question one and read it this way, can someone who's used alcohol in powder form become an AA member? A non-alcoholic who uses alcohol in powder form become an AA member? No, they cannot. And Bill goes on to say, he says, can AAs who have suffered both alcoholism and addiction form themselves into special groups, purpose groups to help other AAs who are having drug trouble? Could such a special purpose group call itself an AA group? Could such a group also include non-alcoholic drug users? If so, should these non-alcoholic pill or drug users be led to believe that they have become AA members? Is there any objection if AAs who have had dual problems join outside groups such as Narcotics Anonymous? And then he says this, while some of these questions almost answer themselves, others do not. But all of them, I think, can be readily resolved to the satisfaction of everyone if we have a good look at the AA traditions which apply. Such a great line by Bill. The first thing we should always be doing is applying the AA tradition to the question. It's the first thing. And another look at our long experience with special purpose groups in which AAs are active today, both within and without our society. And then he has a strong statement here. I wish sometimes that this line right here, like, I don't want them messing with Traditions Illustrated. They seem to have wanted to done that enough. But if they had asked me to mess with it, I would have just added one line, and it would be this one right here. Our first duty as a society is to ensure our own survival, period. As a society, our first duty is to ensure our own society, our own survival. Therefore, we have to avoid distractions and multi-purpose activity. An AA group as such cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone the problems of the whole world. That's a lot of personal problems. All the personal problems of your group's members. And then this statement, sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is the sole purpose of an AA group. Groups have repeatedly tried other activities and they have always failed. It has also been learned that there is no possible way to make non-alcoholics into AA members. Well, that is a really strong statement. And this is conference-approved literature. This is our group conscience. It does not say you just need a desire to stop drinking. It says very clearly there is no way possible to make non-alcoholics into AA members. We have to confine our membership to alcoholics, and we have to confine our AA groups to a single purpose. If we don't stick to these principles, we shall surely collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. So, I just want to look at a note here for a second. Hold on, because I wrote myself some notes. So, I know I don't have a ton of time, but there's a couple of points I want to point out in the like second part of this pamphlet. He goes, I hate that they don't put page numbers on this, by the way. It's very confusing, and maybe someone suggest that. But if you're unfolding the pamphlet with the top side up and you're looking at the last quarter fold on the right, second full paragraph starts with, "Therefore, I see no way of making non-alcoholic addicts into AA members. Experience says loudly, we can admit no exceptions, even though drug users and alcoholics happen to be first cousins of a sort. If we persist in trying this, I'm afraid it will be hard on the drug user himself as well as an AA. We must accept the fact that no non-alcoholic, whatever his affliction, can be converted into an alcoholic AA member." That's a very important line historically, because you don't see that those words used a lot together. Alcoholic AA member. You have to be an alcoholic to be an AA member, to see those three words next to each other. And then it says, suppose we're approached by a drug addict who nevertheless has a genuine alcoholic history. And Bill is honest. He says there was a time when we would have rejected that person. Many AAs had the almost comical notion that they were pure alcoholics, guzzlers only, no other serious problems at all. When alcoholic ex-cons and drug users first turned up, there was much pious indignation. What will people think, chanted the pure alcoholics. Happily, this foolishness has long since evaporated. We hope. We hope that it's evaporated. And then he talks about one of the best mans he knows, who had been on the needle before he joined AA. But prior to that, he was a terrific alcoholic, and his history proved it. Therefore, he qualified for AA. And you can do a lot more reading. That man's name is Tom, Dr. Tom. You can read about him and certain things in Yale, when Bill spoke at Yale. But I want to talk about the end of this pamphlet. Where are we in 2021? This pamphlet is awesome. At the end, it says, we cannot give AA membership to non-alcoholic narcotic addicts, but like anyone else, they should be able to attend certain open AA meetings. And then it goes to say, AA members who are so inclined should be encouraged to band together in groups to deal with sedative and drug problems, but they ought to refrain from calling themselves AA groups. Now, it can get complicated there. So I'm going to try to go really slow. There is no such thing as a dual fellowship meeting. No such thing. There is such thing as an AA event with Al-Anon participation, and an Al-Anon event with AA participation. But there's no such thing as combined 12-step fellowship meetings. That actually violates all of the fellowship's traditions. We don't put multiple fellowship symbols on the same flyer. It's confusing. It sends the wrong message. So what's Bill talking about here then when he says AA members who are so inclined should be encouraged to band together in groups to deal with the sedative and drug problems? Well, here's what he's saying. If you've been through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and you've had a spiritual experience, here's another thing we hear in AA all the time. We hear people who've never been to that fellowship's meeting say there's no solution in that other fellowship. Again, it goes back to our arrogance. Why are we so arrogant? Why do we always have to be the best? Wouldn't it be, I'd like to think, that NA and AJ and CA and GA and SLA, OA, I'd like to think we're all doing the best we can with what we have. Nobody better or worse than the other. But what is this saying then? What about if you're at a clubhouse and you do meet somebody who says, you know, I don't have a problem with alcohol, but I come to these AA meetings because where I was going, no one was talking about solution. Well, I just want to be clear on that. I want to say this in a decently nice way, but I think most of us could say we've wandered into an AA meeting or two where maybe we were curious that we didn't hear any solution. I mean, is AA perfect meeting, solution all the time, 100%? So arrogant. So if you run into somebody who's going to one of those fellowships and they say there's not a lot of old timers, not a lot of people to take us through the steps. Well, if you have a backyard or a garage or a living room or a picnic table at the park or maybe a room at the clubhouse, there is nothing wrong with you getting together with other people who have other problems and sharing your experience with the steps in a non-AA setting. There is also nothing wrong with having some kind of big book meeting that's clearly, you know, promoted that members of all fellowships can attend, but with no symbols on it. It's not combined AA and CA and DA. No, it's just a bunch of people in recovery who is sharing their experience with other people in recovery. We should be doing that all the time. It also goes on to say, it was thus proven that as individuals, we can carry the AA experience and ideas into any outside field, whatever, provided that we guard anonymity and refuse to use the AA name for money raising or publicity purposes. So just a little side note by Bill. A lot about the sacrifice talked about in Tradition 12. We don't do things for that purpose. It also goes on to say, there seems to be no reason why several AAs cannot join, if they wish, with a group of straight addicts to solve the alcohol and the drug problem together. But obviously such a dual purpose group should not insist that it be called an AA group, nor should it use the AA name in its title. Neither should its straight addict contingent be led to believe that they have become AA members by reason of such an association. Before we go to questions or anything, let's just talk about what's going on in today's world. In full disclosure, I do sit as a non-addict member of the board of Heroin Anonymous. I am not a heroin addict. I do that because I want to take my AA service experience, because they're at a state in their fellowship like we were in the 1940s. And I want to share my AA experience with them. But we have a narcotics epidemic. I know where I live in Florida. Every week, often multiple times a week, someone is telling somebody that somebody we know died of heroin or fentanyl. I know other drugs OD too, but heroin and fentanyl are completely out of control. And we have so many heroin addicts and other narcotics addicts. I just want to use my big book as an example. As I said, Joe and Charlie's squiggly writing. But I have a third edition in front of me. And just so we're not debating and splitting hairs, because I see some of the people are in here, and me included, we have some good hair splitters in this bunch tonight, right? The big book that I have in front of me, this printing and edition, working with others, ends on page 103. So from the front of the doctor's opinion, the preface and the forewords, and all the way to 103, that's about 110 pages. One of the biggest statements that are made in big book studies that drives me crazy is alcohol is only mentioned in the first step. Joe and Charlie would always say, if you work the steps off the wall, you have an off-the-wall program. I'm going to be conservative, again, so that I don't have to split hairs with anyone in this group. There's a lot of smart people here. I'm going to err to be cautious. And I'm just going to go to the end of more about alcoholism, page 43. So add a couple of pages for the doctor's opinion and forwards, and 43. And you got about 50 pages. So 50 pages out of the first 110 are about identification. This many, right there. That many. That is not alcohol is only mentioned in the first step or once. Alcohol is mentioned throughout. Now, I think the thing that we have to really come to terms with is we only have a qualifier for membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. There are no disqualifiers. If you suffer from alcoholism, you can be a member if you say you are. It doesn't matter what else is wrong with you or what else is great about you. We don't have a disqualifier, only a qualifier. And while I'm on that subject, sometimes you hear people say the only job of an AA sponsor is to take someone through the steps. I would argue with that. I think explaining to someone what AA is and what AA isn't is part of a sponsor's job. But I would also tell you, and I don't, maybe this is controversial, I would also tell you that it is a sacred duty of a sponsor to help that new member qualify, to help them qualify themselves as suffering from alcoholism, as having the physical allergy and the mental obsession. But if you run into somebody who doesn't have that, Bill says in the pamphlet that I read, drug addicts are like our cousins. Well, shouldn't we treat our family the best? Not the worst. So if we run into a member of our family, just because they're not an alcoholic, if they suffer from something else, take them to a place that can save their life like AA saved yours. That's not kicking them out of AA. That's saving their life. And the other thing I'll just throw out there and finish with this is, Don P made this prediction in the late 80s, early 90s. When the big book renaissance came on board, he said, unfortunately, we're going to have a lot of first legacy only alcoholics with no experience with the second and third legacy. And unfortunately, what that does, what does that look like? I'll tell you what it looks like. It looks like someone who's had a spiritual experience as a result of the 12 steps, and their ego has convinced them that they can help everybody. That just because they have the same experience in steps 2 to 12, they can help someone with every problem. And I'm here to tell you, it's just simply not true. If one of those problems is not alcoholism, you have to do your darndest to get them to a place that can save their life. Thanks, Amber. Thanks, Dee.
Thank you so, so very much, Billy, for being with us tonight. All right, guys. I so far only have one question in the chat, so please send in your questions for Billy because we do have 15 minutes for questions and answers. All right, Billy, he stepped away, but I'm going to go ahead.
I hear you.
Okay. All right. First question I have, here we go. All right. It says, you mentioned a non-alcoholic pill drug addict cannot be an AA member. If a person who is addicted to benzos and amphetamines, which are prescribed and only when taken, needing to drink alcohol, which is daily, are they an alcoholic? Can they be an AA member?
Listen, who am I to? That's a question they have to answer with this. Do they suffer from the physical allergy? You know, have you ever heard this in a meeting? And maybe I could be dating myself because I hate to date myself, as everyone knows. But I kind of grew up in the cocaine revolution, right, of the 80s and early 90s, even though I never did it. But how many times have I heard somebody say in a meeting that when they drink, that when they take one drink, they immediately start doing lines of cocaine? Well, I have some bad news for them. That's not alcoholism, as described in the big book. Alcoholism is described in the big book is that when you start drinking, you have to keep drinking. Now, we don't care what else you do. Crash cars, get depressed, fight with bartenders and bouncers, fight with cops, wind up in the hospital. You might even smoke weed, do a little coke. God knows. People who drink do all kinds of things. But it's about, are you an alcoholic? Thank you.
Thank you so much, Billy. All right, next. Oh, no, that's not a question. Okay, here we go. Question. What if some say this is an outdated pamphlet and it should be updated because everyone does drugs today? Isn't it the same solution?
First of all, let's be very clear. We're not talking about drugs. We're talking about drug addiction. I know many alcoholics who've done lots of drugs who are not drug addicts. I know many. I know many drug addicts who've drank here and there but are not alcoholics. The people who are asking that question want to bring the definition used in the for-profit recovery world into AA, which is that everything is the same. And my experience is the same experience that Joe and Charlie had and Don P and a lot of other people, which is it's not the same. And again, even if the solution is the same, the newcomer is not going to want, you know, all of us sit here with the benefit of having been through the big book, right? So we've been through the big book. So to us, it's no big deal. But sometimes people in AA get too many years and not enough days. It's a sickness that pervades AA. It's an arrogance. Too many years, not enough days. And what that does is it convinces people that they can help everybody. And they forget what it's like to have 2 days. So let me remind everyone a little bit. Today, when we hear things like, turn over our will and life to the care of God, do a fearless and searching inventory, make a list of everybody you screwed over and then apologize to them. I don't know if everybody can remember this, but when you're new to AA, those seem like pretty drastic suggestions. Who wants to believe in God, write out an inventory, and start apologizing to people? Those things seem drastic. The only way to get someone to do that kind of drastic work is for them to identify that they don't have a choice in the matter. And that's why identification is so important. And it's a dirty little secret in AA today. It's a dirty little secret. AA has become the killing fields of narcotics and heroin addicts. The amount of heroin addicts dying while attending AA is through the roof. It is through the roof. Thanks, Amber.
Thank you so much, Billy. All right, I've got one more question. You've got about 3 minutes, 4 minutes to finish us up, and then I can close us out for this evening. Awesome. Next one. Not everyone who gets to AA understands what an alcoholic is, even if they might eventually get to know that they are. How do we help them come to their own understanding?
Great question. Well, first of all, we stop saying stupid things, right? And what do I mean by stupid things? We don't say things like, well, if you wound up in an AA meeting, you're an alcoholic. But it's total garbage. Lots of people wind up in AA that aren't alcoholic. We have heavy drinkers, binge drinkers, people with work problems. The big book is perfectly laid out for a person with experience to take a new person and allow them to qualify, allow them to decide for themselves. And I'm not even going to get into the part in working with others. That everybody always wants to jump up and down and say, we don't diagnose. Okay, we don't diagnose. But what does it say in working with others? Being convinced your prospect is an alcoholic. That's what it says. So what we have to stop doing is one of the words that I love in the doctor's opinion is frothy. And while I said we need to be compassionate, we don't need to be frothy. We don't need to say, oh, Billy, just because you got your fourth DWI, you're an alcoholic. No, I'm not an alcoholic because I have 4 DWIs. I'm an alcoholic who had the allergy right away. We have to return to what Dr. Silkworth called the medical estimate of alcoholism. we have to first, we don't do frothy. You know what we don't do either? Ism. I, self, me, ridiculousness. I'm not saying there's no such thing as an ism. What I am saying is all the employees who work for me have one. It's just not the same as mine. But only about 10% of them have a physical allergy and a mental obsession. We have to be compassionate, yet not frothy. And focus on the medical estimate of alcoholism, not on external situations that people say make you an alcoholic. And get rid of the term alcoholic thinking. Another frothy created by the outside recovery world. No, it's human thinking. So that's it, Amber. Thanks.
Thanks, Billy. I'm going to sneak in one more because it did just pop up in the chat. We do have like two or three more minutes. What is a good way to deal with someone in a closed AA meeting who introduces themselves as an addict?
I mean, that's a great question. Here's what I would say. First of all, my good friend John G passed away 2 months ago. And John was a good man and a delegate from Chicago. But I remember John explained to me one time, he said, "Billy, why do you get so mad at what people call themselves in a meeting?" He said, "I don't believe a thing a newcomer says for a year. So why does it get you so bent out of shape?" So what I would tell you is, humiliation and bullying have no place in Alcoholics Anonymous at any level, group, district, area, any level. If you're willing to complain about someone and the way they call themselves, well, if you're not willing to spend an hour in a diner every week with them, passing on Alcoholics Anonymous to them, you've given up your right to complain. You have no right to complain. It's not going to be removed by personal humiliation. And I want to say this too. The problem is not the newcomer coming out of rehab who calls themselves an addict. They don't know any better. You know who the problem is? The guy or the girl with 20 or 25 years who's still identifying themselves as suffering from more than one thing in a sole purpose program. Identifying themselves with a duality of purpose, and they have 20 or 30 years. That's what's setting the bad example for the newcomer. It's not the newcomer. Thanks.